Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In episode 33, our visionary is Rachel Goenka, CEO and founder of the Chocolate Spoon Company, a hospitality venture with a chain of chic restaurants, bakeries and patisseries. A young businesswoman, at 24 Rachel embarked on her entrepreneurship journey, and currently her restaurant portfolio comprises of 17 outlets and 2 central kitchens across Mumbai and Pune. She has also authored a book called Adventures with Mithai and is also the youngest member of the management committee of the National Restaurants Association of India. Tune in as Rachel shares her journey and also talks about the repercussions of the current pandemic on the restaurant industry.
So I grew up in Dubai and I still pretty much consider Dubai home. I only recently moved to Bombay. I think it's been probably about 3 or 4 years that I've properly lived in Bombay. Otherwise, even after starting the restaurants, I was back and forth between Dubai and Bombay. And then after I got married, my husband's was a banker with Goldman Sachs in Dubai. So I would spend 2 weeks in Bombay, 2 weeks in Dubai. So it was a lot of back and forth, you know. So there was no real, Bombay's become home now. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
But for the longest of time, you know, Dubai sort of has my heart, I guess.
Yeah. And what did you study when you were growing up?
So
and what were your aspirations?
I studied, so in university, I did journalism.
Yeah.
And I did a minor in political science and in English. Yeah. But when I was growing up, there were a whole bunch of things that I wanted to do. There was a phase where I desperately wanted to become a lawyer, to a point where I would actually read law books for fun. And I was obsessed with every single law show out there, from like Ally McBeal to Boston Legal. Like I would just lap those shows up.
Yeah.
And I started reading a lot of law books for fun.
Hmm.
So I would just, you know, sort of buy books on different topics in law and just start studying for fun, which my parents found absolutely bizarre, because most people my age were partying and I was sitting there and reading law books. But I get bored really easily too.
Hmm.
So it takes a lot to sort of pique my interest for a long period of time. And then, you know, gave up on that and then decided that I wanted to become an animal behavioral specialist. And I think that just stems from the fact that, like, I've always had a lot of animals. My dad came very close to buying me a lion once. Very funny story. Yeah, very, very funny story. That didn't happen, and thank God that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But this is Dubai, right? So Dubai, you kind of like, you can have these exotic animals.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and then journalism is something that I always did, and it's something that I continue to do even now. Like I continue to write as well, and I've been writing a lot extensively throughout the lockdown. Before that as well, written for a lot of magazines, a lot of newspapers.
Hmm.
Finally wrote my own book.
Yeah.
I'm in talks about the second book right now. So let's see.
Yeah. And we'll come to that a little later. But let's first talk about Rachel, about the present. And I would like to know more about the Chocolate Spoon Company. So what was the motivation particularly behind starting this? And what are some of the other restaurants that are operating under your portfolio?
So my first baby is Assi Spoon, and that I started when I was about 23 years old, 23, 24. For me, it was about putting my personality on a plate. And, you know, I say that quite literally because that's how the name Sassy came about. When we were thinking about how to name the restaurant, you know, I was just very, everybody said, you know, why don't you just call it Sassy? Because you're extremely sassy and you're all spunky and sarcastic. And so it was also, you know, when I was studying at Le Cordon Bleu at the time, and I was conceptualizing what I wanted to do when I came back to Bombay. Initially it was, I want to do this really fabulous wedding boutique cake shop type of thing. then I said, nah, it's, you know, it's too niche. Let me do something more, you know, a little bit more, less intimidating. And I decided I wanted to do a patisserie. But then when I started getting into the whole food aspect, I realized that I actually just wanted to get into restaurants big time, because I couldn't take away from, you know, the savory part as well. I mean, although I specialized in pastry, I still sort of studied everything when I was in Ireland. And that's still a big, huge part of me. I know a lot of people sort of pigeonhole me into being this dessert pastry chef.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm not complaining. But people tend to forget that, you know, I do have extensive training in the savory department as well.
Yeah. And what are some of the other restaurants that are operating currently under your portfolio? Apart from Sassy Spoon?
So we've got the Sassy Spoon, the House of Mandarin. We've got the Baraza, which is in Pune. And Sassy Teaspoon, which is my patisserie brand as well. Yeah, so those are the brands that we have. And, you know, right now we're doing a few smaller brands through cloud kitchen formats as well.
Yeah. And is it something that you've already launched? Is this something that you're working on right now?
No, it's so we've kind of already launched them, but they're still much smaller concepts. So so we've got Chan's Chinese, which is a sort of smaller cloud kitchen concept that we've got. Then Cake Me Home is another patisserie cloud kitchen format that we've done. So these are the two formats. Sol Tadka is the Indian format that we have in terms of the cloud kitchen.
And I think in total, there are around 6-7, I think, ventures that you're then overseeing, if I'm correct.
I've lost count. I honestly have lost count. I don't even think it's relevant anymore. As long as you're just like doing your job and you're taking care of all the babies, it doesn't matter how many there are now. It's just come to that point where, you know, you just have all these children and you just have to feed all of them. So,
yeah,
you know, that's the analogy.
Yeah. And Rachel, see, I'm an amateur in this space, right? And I'm just going to ask you a very basic / stupid question. How does
there are no stupid questions. I only stupid answers, and that's my fault.
But tell me, Rachel, how does the idea to start something like this come about? Like, is it something where you're like, okay, I want to start something where I want to, open up a cloud kitchen for an Indian cuisine? And then you start going about creating the menu for that, creating the branding for it? Or is it the other way around, where you have some sort of like a vague idea of what the menu is and what the flavors would be, and then you start building upon the idea and either, you know, build a restaurant or a cloud kitchen out of it?
No, you know, I think a lot of times what it is that these things just sort of morph into themselves. I mean, you know, the best way I can explain it is, I honestly, when I got into this industry at 23 years old, I didn't think I would be where I am today, you know, with all these brands and all these multiple restaurants. Sassy Spoon was what I started with. And, you know, now fast forward, I'm into multiple cuisines.
Yeah.
Which is something that I never thought I would do. Like, I never saw myself getting into a Chinese format, for example, because I'm not a Chinese trained chef. Yeah. I love eating Chinese food. I know a lot about it, but I don't have that formal training, you know, where it comes to being able to sort of man that kitchen. My training is fundamentally in French and European cuisine. So, but it's just about opportunity. And, you know, when the opportunity sort of presents itself and meeting the right people at the right time, the timing, the opportunities that sort of pop up, like even with the cloud kitchens, for example, we realized that, we had the bandwidth to introduce more brands within the same setup that we already had. And it was just a matter of, you know, how do we sort of maximize our output?
Yeah.
And how you spread yourself. And I think the lockdown and this whole entire pandemic situation has a lot of people did that. And you know, how do you sort of look at other revenue streams.
And
that's where all these sort of things pop up. So, you know, you say, okay, fine, I've got this kitchen space. I'm already churning, say, high-end Chinese out of this. I've got the ingredients. I've got the chefs. I have the knowledge. Maybe I can do something a little bit more massy and not sort of so fine dine. It's just a matter of tweaking the menu a little bit, but I'm opening myself up to a completely new audience. Just by doing minor tweaks, you know? But having said that, I know a lot of people think doing cloud, like starting a cloud kitchen is easy. It's equally as hard. And I actually want to say this on the record, because there's just all this talk and hype around cloud kitchens right now. And everybody thinks it's the way to go. But, you know, because people assume that the CapEx is a lot lower. But having said that, the amount that you have to spend on marketing and actually getting the word out there about your brand, establishing your brand without having any high street presence, that's where there's a massive challenge. And I know a lot of very, very seasoned restaurateurs who have struggled with this, because most people don't even know that some of these brands belong to them.
And Rachel, just for the audience, can you tell me what are the areas that your cloud kitchens are serving right now?
So Mumbai and Pune.
Okay. And all of Mumbai?
Yes, most of Mumbai.
Okay.
Most of Mumbai.
Great. So Rachel, let's talk about your love for writing, and especially your debut book called Adventures with Mithai. Can you tell me more about this? Like, what is this book about? What is the gastronomical journey that this book covers?
So Adventures with Mithai is something that hasn't been done before. So I'm very proud of that. I was very keen that the first book I write is something that honestly, because it's very challenging to write a recipe book that hasn't been done before. Because so many of these concepts have already been explored. And, you know, there have been, while there have been books written about, you know, recipe books about making mithai, there hasn't been a single recipe book out there where somebody has taken mithai and applied, you know, international slash, you know, traditional French patisserie techniques to mithai and turned that into a completely contemporary dessert.
So are you experimenting with the traditional mithai recipes?
I am not touching the traditional mithai recipes at all. The whole idea behind the book and the concept behind the book is that anybody can go buy store-bought mithai, get it home, and then just turn it into a completely different dessert.
Oh, wow. Would you like to share one or two which are your favorites and which are also relatively easier for the audience to try?
So the beauty of the book is, and I like, and this is just the way, because if I had to buy a book, this is how I would approach it, right? I mean, I've picked up so many recipe books where, you know, the recipe looks great, the picture looks great, I've gone to try out the recipe and it's a disaster. Something or the other doesn't work. So I actually got a bunch of my friends and people that I knew who aren't cooks to actually test out recipes and to see whether they could make it at home. And and that's how we did the recipe testing. So although the R&D was done in a professional kitchen, the actual recipe testing was done, you know, just to idiot proof it, let me put it that way. Because the whole idea was anybody should be able to make this at home. It shouldn't be intimidating. It shouldn't be difficult. And it should be fun. And I've spread it across different categories. So I've got an ice cream category. I've got a dessert category. There's cakes and cheesecakes. There's truffles. So there's a lot of different stuff that you can do. I've got like something as simple as a kaju katli truffle or pista barfi granola bar.
Oh my God. Sounds delicious.
You know, a chocolate barfi cheesecake.
Wow. And you're currently, as you mentioned, under the lockdown, you're writing another book of yours. What is that about?
I haven't started writing the second book. I'm just playing around with the concept. But I've realized my style of writing books is churning out books in 2 months. So that's what I plan on doing. I was actually just talking to my editor today, and we were just discussing this concept note. And she was talking to me and she said, you know what, after working with you, because we banged out this book in 2 months, and I'm talking like research, development, shooting the book, writing the manuscript, handing it in, 2 months flat. You know, that's how long we took to write this book. And I said, yeah, I'm not working with any like bigger deadline. This is what I'm working with. Just put all this pressure on me and I think I can churn out a good book. And, you know, the book was extremely well received globally as well. It won the World Gourmand Award for best pastry book in the world. Wow. So definitely, you know, the motivation I needed to sort of write book number two.
And is it also, is it going to be around mithai or dessert, or is there
something else to this? No, I'm going to do something different. I've realized, you know, you only sort of do something well when you're sort of obsessed and extremely passionate about what you're doing. So I don't know if, because there was a lot of energy and a lot of time that went into actually coming up with 50 different recipes using mithai.
5050?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, actually, I must mention this. I actually got the chance to sort of meet the Prime Minister and present the book to him, and he was absolutely sort of floored with the idea of, you know, mithai coming from all over the country.
Yeah,
and he gave me a brilliant idea for the next edition. He said, if I were you, if you know, the next time you sort of go in for a reprint with the book, do a map of India and actually highlight where all the mithai in the book is coming from.
Yeah,
which is something none of us thought about.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. So Rachel, tell me something. You being a writer, you being an entrepreneur, and also a mother, how do you sort of juggle your role and time between things? And how do you take out time for yourself amongst everything?
Split personality disorder. That's what I'm going to say. But I mean, you know, honestly, this pandemic has taught me so much. It's taught me patience, first of all, because like I could be sitting here recording this podcast with you, and you know, my son could be running in and like howling or screaming or saying something to me completely embarrassing for sure, which would get recorded, and it's fine. Like, you end up becoming unapologetic about it, because I mean, that is life, you know. But I mean, we're slowly getting back to work, and I'm happy to get back into the office, because you do need to step out of just one space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know,
and I think that definitely helps.
You going back to work, you doing this podcast, the audience might not know it, but you're already expecting your second child, right?
I had to make the most of this pandemic.
Smart decision.
Yeah, might as well, right?
Yeah. Rachel, I would just like to end the conversation by asking you one last thing. I know you're exhausted, and I know you're quite busy as well. But tell me, what are some of the repercussions that you've seen of the current pandemic on the restaurant industry? And during this time, and what are some of the personal and sort of professional goals that you're setting for yourself, considering the time that we're living in right now, considering your business, considering the industry that you operate in?
So look, I'll be very honest. When we started out, it was really tough. Nobody knew what was going to happen. And in March, in fact, before the lockdown was announced, we as a restaurant body, the National Restaurant Association of India, we collectively took a call to shut our restaurants down. And none of us had any idea that the lockdown was coming, but we just figured that, you know what, there is no responsible way any of us can control this whole social distancing, because there was just no time and nobody had any knowledge about this virus. Everything spread so fast.
Yeah.
So we all shut down, and that made us take a massive hit, because you're obviously shutting down so suddenly, without any planning. You know, you've got stocks which obviously are all perishable. I mean, the amount of things that were just thrown out is, you know, it's I can't even think of a word for it, but I mean,
I get the essence.
You know, when you think about, you know, how many people that food could have fed, And just not just the monetary part of it, but just the fact that like there were people who didn't have food to eat, and over here, you know, we had to throw things out because things were expiring, and that's just a very small part of it. And then there's the human cost as well. The fact that we weren't, you know, making any money at all, but we still had this massive payroll that we were still paying our employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, but I think what we have learned from this is restaurateurs are very good at adapting.
Mm.
So we're all chameleons that way.
Mm-hmm.
And although none of us got into this business to, you know, operate delivery only kitchens, essentially during the entire lockdown, that's what we became.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, some of the best restaurants in the country, which were fine dine restaurants, suddenly doing delivery only food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, none of us would ever fathom, but we did it and tweaked our menus, worked with smaller menus, you know, try to be creative at the same time to keep things interesting for our consumers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think, you know, for us, the way I see it is we're in three phases, survive, revive, and thrive. And that's the mantra that we have been following. And, you know, we've been drilling that in my company. And yeah, my husband actually came up with that mantra. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, so initially we were in that survival phase where we were just sort of trying to stay afloat. Now we're in the revival phase and, you know, we're just getting back up on our feet. And the good part is, I think people are stepping out. People are sort of more educated about the virus. You know, with people are hopeful that the vaccine's coming out soon. And, you know, I got corona when I was in my first trimester.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even stepped out of the house. I just sort of entered the house. Nobody even knows how to enter the house. And everybody in my family, except for my husband, got the virus. And, you know, I guess it's just something that you can't escape.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I think initially that fear psychosis is now sort of getting fairly numbed down, and we're seeing a lot more people stepping out into restaurants, and I'm hopeful that things get back to some sort of normalcy by 2021.
Restaurants, they were a very crucial part of our social fabric and how we used to have a cultural and social life in at least the tier one and tier two cities. And
I think they still are, you know. I mean, food, if anything, and if you actually think about it, food was the only thing that was keeping everybody sane during this lockdown. If you think of the amount of banana bread that has been baked like across countries in this world, like, it's insane. I don't want to look at banana bread again. You know, people, I had so many people calling and asking me, can you give me a recipe for banana bread? There are other cakes that you can bake, but food is what kept everybody going, and that's the beauty of it, right? It brings people together. It's about celebration, and it's a great crutch. We all put on a ton of weight, but I don't think that's something that you can take away from anybody.
Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's vision.nari. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's thevisionnari podcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new visionary. Have a great day.